Let's call the Senate Rules Committee to order. The purpose for this meeting today is to hear the Senate Bill 1002, making special appropriations for the payment of permanent fund dividends and providing for an effective date. It's been referred to us. Today we have Senator, it is 1 minute after noon. Thank you, Senator. We have Senator Giesel with us. We have Senator Costello with us, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Kawasaki's here, and Senator Biggs is on the phone, by the way, Scott, and then myself, Senator Coghill. We have Kerry Gubernreiter on records, and Nate Williams over here, and we got some help with Kerry. Thank you. Senator Stedman. Why don't you come and give us an overview of the bill? And if you have staff, I think Pete was going to come and join you. So just introduce yourself for the record, and we'll go over this Senate Bill 1002. Thank you, Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bert Stedman, Senator for District R, all the islands of Southeast, most all of them, except for a couple uninhabited ones. And today what we have for the committee's consideration is an appropriation bill sponsored by the Finance Committee, which would pay a dividend this upcoming fall. And the bill is fairly straightforward, so let me kind of walk through it for those that are at home. It would be a dividend to qualifying Alaskans of $1,600, $1,600. And that would be a total of $1,071,000,000 estimated. Now, there's a lot of discussion out in the public, Mr. Chairman, about the size of the dividend. And it's not so much the individual dividend itself that alarms some of the financial views of our structure. It's when we take the total financial impact and we try to cash flow it. So this $1,600 dividend is a little bit more than the statute that is in place today. That would be roughly around a $3,000. And that would be roughly a $1.95 billion impact. So what we're talking about today is a $1,600 dividend with a $1,071,000,000 impact. That's almost as much as it costs to run K-12 education for the school for a year. So it is a huge impact, and this bill lists out some funding sources, and there's three. And I'll go ahead and list through them, Mr. Chairman, if I could, and then back up and talk about that selection and why the selection is there. But we're going to take in the bill a proposed $770 million from the general fund. We'll take $172 million from the statutory budget reserve, and that's, for those watching at home, takes a simple majority vote of both bodies, and that's one of our primary savings accounts. And then we'd go to the higher education fund for $128 million, and we'd also use the higher education fund as a shock absorber fund. In other words, that amount, that $128 million, is estimated. And the reason we have to use an estimated amount in one of the fund sources is because we don't know how many qualified Alaskans are going to apply and how many checks are going to be sent out to Alaskans. So there's, we have to have some flexibility. But if I can back up a little bit, that total of $1,071,000,000. Now, when we look at taking $770 million from the general fund, you got to ask yourself, where does that general fund money come from? It doesn't fall out of the sky like rain in Juneau today. I wish it did. We would have swelling bank accounts. It comes from taxes distributed throughout the state, mainly oil revenue, as we all are well aware, the dominance, but also commingled in that $770 million would be part of the 5.25% draw on the earnings reserve. That money gets commingled into the general fund, and it's pretty hard to bifurcate and track each individual dollar. In other words, I can't tell you where, for instance, a particular taxpayer, maybe it's a in the oil basin, where his or that company's a particular dollar ends up being spent here in our budget process. Nor can I tell you, Mr. Chairman, where each dollar of the 5.25% coming out of the permanent fund is actually spent on. It gets commingled and expensed. So part of that $770 million and, would be commingled with the earnings reserve draw already taking place. And by the way, I just want to add that 5.25% is by statute. When we go above that 5.25%, we have been referring to it as an unstructured draw. We have been looking at the permanent fund to be run as a under an endowment plan or concept, and restrict the withdrawals by statute to 5.25% and less, and soon to be in a year or so down to 5%. So when we go down to the next item, the statutory budget reserve, those funds at $172 million, that's roughly the balance left in the fund. So that would liquidate this fund, pretty much. It would stay on the books, and we could add to it in the future when we have excess revenues and build that back up. But that would be pretty much, for all practical purposes, all of the statutory budget reserve. And again, for those watching at home, don't get that confused with the constitutional budget reserve, which has $2.3 billion or so in it, that is takes a three-quarter vote from the legislature. So this is our smaller primary savings account. Then the third item as a fund source, again used as a shock absorber, is a higher education fund. It has roughly $340 million in it. We're proposing to pigeonhole out of it about $128 million, and will leave us a couple hundred million dollar balance. So there's no reason to be alarmed that we're going to make a huge structural change in that program over the next year or two with this. But that all told, those appropriations is $1,071,000,000, which would be or equate to a $1,600 dividend. So the reason that we have not put before the committee, Mr. Chairman, is a full earnings reserve draw. It's earnings from the permanent fund. The earnings reserve is capped at 5.25%. And that is a statute that has just as much validity as the dividend statute, which requires a $3,000 dividend, if you were to follow that statute. So one of those two statutes would be violated. It's very common for people when they speak to talk about one statute and ignore the other one. But you have to recognize both statutes are on the books and in play. So when we look at where we're going to draw the funds from, we looked at where we're going to, what sources make the lesser amount of money, what will give us a lesser impact going forward as a rate of return. So we chose the general fund, the statutory budget reserve, and the higher education fund versus the ERA. And the earnings reserve fund also, when you go into what we call the unstructured draw, if we were to take all of the $1,071,000,000 out of the earnings reserve, we would be taking what they'd call an ad hoc draw, refer to an ad hoc draw, over the 5.25%. And one of the couple things to remember when we deal with the permanent fund, when we have a statutory commitment after several years of discussion that limit the draws at 5.25%, that percentage, although is a little bit high, it wasn't high enough to require the permanent fund to structurally change its asset allocation or its management policies. And when we eventually slide it down to 5%, I'll make it a little easier, and some of us, like myself, argue for even 4.5%. But if we Mr. Chairman, go in and start drawing over 5.25% virtually right away. It's only been a year since we set that amount. The permanent fund will find itself in a position where they can't rely on the legislature on guidance on how much we're going to demand at any given year from them to help in operating the state, regardless if it's paying for education or paying a dividend, fixing our roads, whatever it is. It's just money out the door to them. They'll have to review their asset allocation modeling, change some of their investment targets, and otherwise be a little more conservative and hoard more cash to potentially be able to respond to a cash call that the group of 60 legislators and the governor at the time may so impose on that $65 billion portfolio. So there is consequences in just willy-nilly going to the permanent fund and telling them to send you a check. We have to respect that. The other comment I'd like to make, Mr. Chairman, for those of us, and when I look at the committee, I know the vast majority of the committee were all born in Alaska, born in the territory, a couple of them, mm-hmm. along with the presenter, were territorial babies. Times were a lot tighter then, at least from what we've been told by our parents and our grandparents, and they seem to survive just fine in territorial days. And when we advanced into statehood, we walked into this huge oil boom. And we happened to live in a very fruitful time period where we had a lot of improvements in our quality and standard of living to get us on par pretty much with the rest of the continental U.S. That took a lot of money. It came, frankly, from the oil industry and our development of our assets. And we set aside, Mr. Chairman, collectively, $60, $65 billion in that portfolio. And if we, in turn, not only devour all our current reoccurring revenue, but we start eating our seed capital for future generations, we're impacting our descendants. And not for next year, in 10 years from now, but from 25 years from now, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, it goes on in perpetuity. So it's a significant decision that faced the legislature how to finance our current obligations and not devour the seed capital that really should be left for future generations of Alaskans. And all those nuances get calibrated into the so-called political decision of selecting the fund sources for the $1,600 dividend. And Mr. Chairman, we have a effective date, I think, of July 1 of this year, if this bill passes both bodies and is signed by the governor. That would be the time it would be effective for this year. So in a nutshell, Mr. Chairman, that is kind of the essence of this bill. And I got one other quick comment, because I should have put it in the structure here, because obviously this is off-the-cuff testimony today. I didn't write it out or put any bullet points down. But for those watching at home, the general fund operating budget for the state is $4.4 billion, roughly this year, $4.4 billion. And the dividend, $1,600 dividend would be an additional billion. So it's a little bit less than 0.25% of all the other obligations. We also have, in closing, Mr. Chairman, we have to finance a capital budget coming forward, and it's roughly a couple hundred million after that. It's 180 now, roughly. The House has control of it. They'll probably add a little bit, so just call it 200. And then we have fiscal notes. We have to deal with the crime spree all across the state. And we're expecting that to be somewhere around $40 million. So all told, when you look at the expenditure side, we have another $240 million of budgetary obligations coming before the legislature, in addition to what's in front of us with the dividend and the operating budget, just to kind of put it in context for the people at home that there are two major component parts beyond the dividend, the capital budget and the fiscal notes, and those are for cost of legislation this year that we passed. So we'll have more to come on that. But Mr. Chairman, that pretty much concludes my initial remarks, and I'd be more than glad to try to answer.
Before we get to questions, I wanted to welcome senators and representatives that I've seen in the room. And so I got Senator Stevens and Senator Birch. Senator Ray Jackson, I think, was here. We have certainly Senator Stedman, Senator Olson over here, Senator Wilkowski, I see in the back, Senator Reinbold, Senator Bishop all the way in the back. Any other senators that I missed? So we got Representative Edgman here, Speaker of the House. Representative Foster, also here, Chairman of Finance, and Senator Representative Josephson. Who else? Any representatives that I missed? I think for those who are listening in and those of us who are going to be making decisions, this is one of the pieces of unfinished business. And because of being in a special session, we're not able to look at a method of changing the formula at this point. And so the next best thing is to how to create a sustainable dividend. And I see this as probably one of the better ways. And your explanation of not only the dollars in how to fund this were well said, but I think the future generations, I've often said that, us baby boomers, not only born in the territory of Alaska, but we had some of the best building opportunity Alaska's ever seen because of the oil boom, because of the energy of statehood, because of the time in the American economy, our retirement systems, our wages, our working conditions, the equality of workforce, all that has been to our benefit, plus a dividend. And I think it's important that we take the benefit that we've been given over the last 50 years and make sure that we send the next generation some part of the benefit of the wealth of the state. And so I think your point is well taken on that. Is there questions? We have Pete here as well. So Pete Eklund, questions? And by the way, and Senator Tom Begich on the phone. So Tom, can you hear us all right?
I can.
All right, good. So if you have a question or comment, just chime in. Otherwise, I'm going to look to the committee at this point for any other questions. Senator Kawasaki.
I can. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I got a couple questions. Just first off, this is a special appropriations bill for $1,600. Where did that number come from?
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've been struggling with this issue directly in the legislative process for a good 3 months since we convened. And that number's moved around quite a bit. We looked at the recurring cash flow at the Senate Finance Committee for quite some time. We spent probably a month going over our budget issues. That would default out of the recurring cash flow would be significantly less than the $1,600, at around $1,200 or $1,100. We also had some discussions amongst our colleagues and recognize that the last year or so, the dividend was $1,600. So there is no magic, Mr. Chairman, to the $1,600. It's higher than the reoccurring cash flow after budget reductions. But there seemed to be more consensus and concern amongst a lot of our colleagues that we match a dividend that was equivalent to last year, try to keep the dividend up as much as physically and financially possible without overly straining the permanent fund and or other budgetary impacts that might have to come quicker than a lot of the areas of the state could respond to them. I wouldn't want to say an arbitrary number. There was some thought and discussion behind it, but it does match last year's number, and it's within fiscal reach of the appropriations.
So, and I will just add to it, within the fiscal reach is by some of us the requirement that downward pressure be continual on the operation of government. Another question, sure.
Sure. Just on the Higher Education Trust Fund, you mentioned that there's about $340 million in it now. Do you know how this will impact the needs-based grants and the, I guess the, what is it, the not the governor's, it's the the legislature's performance scholarship, how that will impact those two programs.
Senator Stedden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll take a stab at that answer, because there's roughly $340 million in it. After we did the withdrawal recommended here of 120, it could be a little over 212 million in the balance. I think that's still a going concern. The education fund, but clearly we're running out of funds, saving sources. We have, over the last several years, substantially liquidated the constitutional budget reserve by the billions, well over $10 billion. And if this bill goes forward as presented, the SBR, the statutory budget reserve, would be liquidated. There would still be some higher education funds left. There's the power cost equalization endowment. That's a little under $1 billion. We have been living off of our excess liquidity, our savings accounts, for a good 6 years now. And we are now to the point where the hard decisions have to be made. And we are cognizant, and a lot of us are interested in the ongoing concern of the education fund. But we can also, if there's ever a shortage in that in the next few years, appropriate money back into it also.
Senator Costello, you had a question?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Senator Stedman, for presenting this piece of legislation before the Rules Committee. If it moves out today, it'll then go to the floor where all of the members of the Senate will have a chance to debate and look at it. So I do appreciate that that's going to happen soon this week. When Governor Jay Hammond wrote about the dividend, he said that the dividend is the check on government growth, and that it's the people of Alaska's investment in our government. He spent most of his life promoting a fund that would turn out a dividend from the time that he was in Bristol Bay, in the Bristol Bay region of Alaska, to the time he was in the legislature, and then until finally the dividend, the permanent fund program and the dividend came about. My question about this funding source is, if the payment of the dividend comes from anything but the earnings from our permanent fund, how can it then serve its purpose as the check on government spending?
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, in my opening remarks, I talked about how the general fund is commingled and it's very difficult, frankly impossible, to track individual dollars. We're going to have the draws out of the permanent fund commingled with other monies. We can always take a look at the money coming from the permanent fund and compare it to the dividend amount and look for the fairness test, the red face test that you referenced. But there is no, I guess, magic bullet here. The concern that with the permanent fund, not only does it have to pay the dividend, but we need to be very careful we don't overdraw and live within the 5.25% structure. The other point I'd like to mention is when the calculation was made for the formula for, that is in place today for the dividend, the portfolio was somewhere around $1 billion. Now, 40 years later, it's $65 billion. My concern, Mr. Chairman, is what are we going to do when the portfolio is $120 billion? And that discussion is being wrapped into the discussion also. of how we deal with this. So there is no easy answer, Mr. Chairman, on some of these questions. We just have to do the best we can in our judgment for the benefit of all Alaskans and in dealing with the permanent fund of the future Alaskans that aren't even born yet.
Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Stedman, I appreciate the information you've presented. I want to ask you about something that's happened during the tenure of your time here related to the permanent fund and the dividend. So you can correct me if I have some of these dates and amounts wrong, but it was about 2008, I believe it was under Governor Palin, I think it was 2008, that there was a rather sizable dividend. I think it was $2,600, somewhere around that amount. And in addition, the governor added to that, I think it was $1,200 in an energy check. I'll just call it a check. I don't know what else to call it. All of this came out of the ERA, is my understanding, and you can correct me on that. So that was 2008. Well, then we had the mortgage correction, the market correction, very dramatic recession hit in terms of stocks and so forth. And so that in 2009, it came time to pay another dividend, and there actually wasn't money to pay that dividend. As a result, the Permanent Fund Corporation was, my understanding, forced to sell assets to have revenue to pay a dividend. So, Senator Stedman, you were here during those years. I'd be interested in your recollection and information about that, those particular years, but also what risks we face today in a similar scenario.
Senator Stedman?
This is my just recollection, because I wasn't tipped off to the question earlier to refresh my memory, but I was co-chairing the Senate Finance Committee at the time, and we had the energy extra dividend, because we had a very aggressive tax structure on the oil industry for high prices at the time, and we had high oil. So the governor at that time thought it'd be nice to have an energy rebate to help people through the winter with their energy costs, and that extra check went out. Shortly thereafter, and again, we weren't under this 5% draw, percent of market value at the time. It didn't exist at the time, other than in concept and discussions for future. And then we walked into the Great Recession. And the Great Recession hit, and we were at the finance table trying to respond to that, and we did in numerous ways, one of which was large capital budgets to keep the state out of a recession, which was very successful in that regard. The losses had amounted to such a significant amount within the permanent fund that the dividends, just like today, are paid out of the earnings reserve, which is the realized gains and dividends of your trading and gains that you make on your assets. Those became perilously close to zero, and we were concerned at the finance table that we weren't going to have the ability to have a dividend to the people of Alaska. And all this time, pretty much since the permanent fund had been created, politics had been kind of kept out of the board. Some of us thought that was unfortunate, that the dividend was going to get hammered and possibly be next to nothing, but so be it. We weren't interested in having political pressure put on the permanent fund to churn their portfolio, to create additional gains by selling assets that they really should keep just to pay a dividend, which is, in fact, in my opinion, what happened. And we expressed our dismay at the time to the head of the permanent fund and not liking the permanent fund buckling to political pressure to pay a dividend, and all this at the same time talking about switching to a percent of market value approach which would then be on a percent of the overall value over the trailing years, like we're trying to manage now, which would then ensure that we have a dividend every year, regardless of the market goes up and down on their trading gains and losses. So politics did creep in to the permanent fund, and some of us grumbled about it at the time. And that is why, quite frankly, Mr. Chairman, I brought up earlier in the conversation the political pressures put on inadvertently or inadvertently by the legislature on overdrafting the 5.25% on the permanent fund, because that is sending the permanent fund trustees a message that they can't rely on the 5.25% being a cap. The only thing they can rely on is they have a big pool of money, we spend all our other monies, and they're the next target. And that then leads to a change in investment behavior that's detrimental to your long-term rates of return and hurts future Alaskans for generations. So it's kind of all intertwined, but hopefully that helps answer the question a little bit. But I distinctly remember sitting at the finance table having a little bit of indigestion with the head of the permanent fund at the time, because I thought that they were a little aggressive in trying to make sure that they got a dividend check. And frankly, that should not be the what drives the permanent fund.
Follow up, and then I'll get to Senator Von Himhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So Senator Stedman, right now there is discussion about there being $19 billion in the earnings reserve account. That some of that is real money, or it's realized earnings, some of it is unrealized. If there was a significant market contraction, what kind of jeopardy does that put the ERA, the earnings reserve account, and by extension the dividend in?
I think the best way to look at it, Mr. Chairman, is that if you go back to the Great Recession, the earnings reserve is still structured the same way as it was back then for all practical purposes. If we have severe financial retractions, which come every generation or so and sometimes skip several generations before you have a real tightening, it pushes the dividend down because there isn't the gains in the portfolio, so that number comes down. It also goes up when you have big bull markets and rising markets, which we've had for the last several years. And we, as I recall, look back in the Great Recession at a percent of market value payout, like we're talking about here, at 5.25, and compared that with the dividend flow through the calculated formula that we have today. And sometimes you'd be ahead, like the statutory dividend formula would be higher than the split on the percentage just because of advancing markets. When markets go up, it's like the tide, all boats rise. And when the markets go down in big downdrafts, there's correlations come together. It's like the tide, all boats go down, and your dividend would be smaller. So under the percent of market value, you'd have a smoother dividend flow over the decades than you would otherwise. So yes, if we had a retraction, a significant retraction, the earnings reserve would decline. And as we draw money out of it, it would decline. And I'd also like to add, Mr. Chairman, even though it's not the point of discussion here, there is discussion in the building to put a significant amount, $12 billion is what the Senate's talking about, into the permanently protected constitutional portion of the permanent fund of that $19 billion. So if the markets go down, that money can never be spent. It's for future generations.
But it would still be valued under that 5.25%. And later on, 5%.
Yes. Yes.
Mind if I go ahead? Senator Von Himhoff, you had a question?
More of a comment, Mr. Chairman. To somewhat address an earlier comment about the dividend being the mechanism by which the citizens could be connected to the permanent fund, that was not the original intent of the fund. And the original intent of the fund can be discerned from the original trustee papers that are published online. that were written and gathered over the late 70s and early 80s. And when the fund, when oil and TAPS was being underway and constructed, there were groups of Alaskans that traveled around the world and visited Saudi Arabia and Norway and Iran and Venezuela to see what they were doing with their sovereign wealth funds. And there were many different mechanisms by which countries were putting setting aside their funds. Our group of folks collectively decided to set aside 25% of annual oil revenues into a fund that would grow in perpetuity for the sole purpose of making sure that when a commodity runs out, which it surely will do, because that's what commodities do, there will be something to show for it. And 40 years later, we've got $64 billion, and that's what we have to show for it. The exact words of the trustee papers, so you can go read them, they're all online, was that the permanent fund was to act as a counter-cyclical of the boom and bust cycle of a commodities market. This particular year, with our draw of a POMV of almost $3 billion and our undesignated general funds revenue from oil and other resources, we have a $600 million surplus. If we did not have that POMV, we'd have about a $2.5 billion deficit. And I don't know how we'd fill that. Going back to the permanent fund was created in the late 70s. The dividend was a couple years later, was created in 1980. And it certainly wasn't a unanimous decision. It was as contentious then as it is now. The trustee papers reflect that. And there's been probably 15 years of trustee papers, and it's all been very all over the map. So to cite Hammond as one perspective, it is just that. It is one perspective. It is not the only perspective. Right now, we are contemplating a $1,600 dividend. Why? Because it's a negotiated amount. We can't afford it. We're draining savings accounts. I don't know what we're going to do next year. We can afford about a $1,000 dividend with a very skinny capital budget. And to sit there and say, well, we've got $18 billion in an earnings reserve account, not anymore. Not in the last couple months, we don't. All that earnings, unrealized earnings, a lot of that's gone. And each time you take more than a 5.25% and you get closer and closer to 6.5%, which is what Callan Associates said that we can make over time, we erode the fund. There's nothing left. We'll just go lower and lower each year, and that POMV that we draw each year goes lower and lower, and we get closer and closer to an income tax. And for us to do an income tax on hardworking citizens to turn around and deposit it into their neighbor's checking account is not a Republican fiscal conservative value, at least not in my book. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think I'll just add to that. When the dividend question came up to Hammond himself, his attitude was you give a dividend, then you tax it back. And that was his attitude, but that was one opinion of many, many opinions, I can tell you. I remember some of the discussion even as a youth. So it's been a hot debate ever since I've been in public life and in private life. So I think this is one way of keeping downward pressure on government, which I think as we go into this governor's first year is appropriate and important. But for me, I think as we do this, we need to do it with the eye of how can we formulate a dividend that is appropriate to Alaska, sustainable to our economy, worthwhile to what the people of Alaska have come to expect from the permanent fund while we protect its earnings capacity. And so I think all those are kind of important as we move forward. Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the remarks that you just made. The Permanent Fund Corporation itself, that Board of Trustees, is required to follow a prudent investor rule. They're held to that, that the investments they make bring the greatest return to the fund itself. And one of the things that I've said before, and it applies wholeheartedly to this situation, is that the legislature is the board of directors for the state of Alaska. And what you just articulated, Mr. Chairman, that we have to look at the most prudent steps for the longevity of the state, for the best interests of the state. What Senator Von Imhoff articulated about the surplus that we have now, what we can afford, the excess draw, these are all things that a board of directors held to their fiduciary responsibility would take into account as they arrive at a number. Now, I've heard some talking points, and Senator Stedman, you've done a great job pointing out that all these funds are commingled. The percent of market value money goes into the general fund, just as the Constitution says it does, and there it is commingled. Here in this bill, you are identifying fund sources to pay a $1,600 dividend. And some people I have heard saying, well, unless it comes from the earnings reserve account, it's a government check. The fact of the matter is, it's a government check, period. The check, if you get a paper copy, which I don't think many people do anymore, it says State of Alaska, Department of Revenue, Treasury. It's a government check. The State of Alaska is an entity together, just as any organization is. No legislator has authority other than as part of the body of either the Senate or the House. And so as the board of directors, you know, people ask where that $1,600 came from. I think Senator Von Imhoff articulated it perfectly. It's what we frankly can afford. So I just wanted to point that out, Mr. Chairman, that the board itself is held to an investment rule. The legislature is held to fiduciary responsibility for the state of Alaska. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I would just add that we find ourselves in this wonderful position of having enough money to be generous in this regard with sharing the wealth of the state of Alaska individually and in the state. It makes it hard because of competing priorities, but it's really not a bad problem if you think about it, because there are some places in the world that don't have this kind of a problem where they are trying to prioritize the cash flow. So I think people need to understand that for what we're trying to do is prioritize as best we can how to share the wealth of the state of Alaska individually, broadly as we can, while still keeping education, public safety, roads, and your annual budgeting, which we're required by law to do, both in constitutional and state law. The other thing is that we live in this really unique state where we hold things in common, whether it's the fish and game, water, forestry, and oil, certainly oil, which has been both a blessing and some challenge. But we also hold in common the ability to keep ourselves safe and keep ourselves in good travel mode, whether it's on roads, highways, bridges, boats, the highway system on the river, on the ocean. So I think the people of Alaska need to understand that we have wrestled with it as much as they have to try to find a what you call a reasonable balance on how to share it. What you don't want to do is yank the economy so hard this way individually or this way by way of government. It's a deliberative, slow, and painful process. And this is one of the ways, I think, that is finding both political and economic ways to do it. So is there any other discussion at this point? Senator Stedman?
Just in closing, and I'll jump out of the hot seat, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the time of the Rules Committee. I know it meets very, very, very seldom. For those watching at home, the fellow next to me, Mr. Pete Eklund, is the primary lead on the Senate operating budget. In case there was operating budget questions or concerns that I may not be able to ask off the top of my head, I asked him to be here. And I would also like to make a comment, Mr. Chairman. The last time, over my 15 years or so here, I was in front of the Rules Committee with Senate President Lyda Green, pursuing the 50-50 match program for the libraries, which I don't think she appreciated, but it did go into existence. And that hopefully has encouraged and improved literacy around the state. And that's one of the strongest things the democracy has, is a literate populace.
Yes.
So they could read and stay informed and watch hearings like we have today, read historic documents, and draw their own conclusions. So I'd just like to thank the Rules Committee for their time today, and hopefully it's another 15 years before I see you again, the Rules Committee.
I will go along with that. Senator Giesel, a motion to move.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate Bill 1002, Work Order 31, LS1029, /U as in uniform, move out of this committee with individual recommendations.
Any objection to moving the bill? Seeing no objection, the bill then will move committee. I'll ask you to stand here after we adjourn to sign the document. Thanks to Senator Stedman and Pete Eklund. Thanks for the Senate members and the House members viewing and being a participant in this. And thanks for the committee members. Appreciate that. With that, this committee is adjourned.